what do we got to do on our end as an injured person to create some good evidence and to help deliver to you?
So step one is when you're at the scene of an accident, be it, you know, a car accident or slip and fall, whatever pictures you can get of the scene is helpful.
Welcome to Crash Course, the guiding voice for those affected by life-altering accidents. I'm your co-host, Kara.
I'm your co-host, Amara.
And we're honored to be here with you on this crucial journey.
Each week, we're dedicated to supporting injured victims by sharing essential insights, practical advice, and reliable information to navigate the maze of recovery and insurance complexities.
Whether you're striving for peace of mind during the claims process or seeking ways to rebuild your life after an accident, this podcast is your beacon of guidance.
We're here to empower you with bite-sized tips and expert insights, free from any vested interests, ensuring you have the tools to navigate this challenging time.
So, if you're directly impacted by an injury, join us weekly as we unravel the complexities, offer clarity, and provide a supportive community.
Get ready to regain control and find your path forward with Crash Course.
Hello, Amara. How's it going this week?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you. Glad to be here with you all.
Absolutely. I know it's a little more relaxed today since we're on a Saturday for once, as opposed to our normal crazy hectic weekday. So a little bit more relaxed for me, at least.
Yeah, definitely. We're both filming from our home studios in Arizona. Weather is nice, 75 degrees. So all of you that are in colder weathers, we're sorry, but come visit.
Yeah, this is why we live here season for sure.
Yep. Anyway, this week we're going to dive into a little bit more into the understanding the personal injury side of things. And we wanted to just bring in a few more topics because I know we last left off with some compensation. And then we talked a little bit about liability and negligence and some of the terminology that we use with personal injury. But this week, we want to go ahead and dive into a couple more topics. So thank you for being here, Amara. I'm excited to see what kind of information that you have to help us with on a legal process.
Absolutely.
So I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about the legal process and sort of the steps that's involved in filing a personal injury claim, just sort of from the basic side.
Yeah. So there's essentially two stages of a claim. The first stage is you open a claim, you negotiate with an adjuster, and you're able to settle. And that's the goal always, is to be able to, you know, settle the claim without having to file a lawsuit. But if we get to a point where the adjuster's evaluation of the claim is just not the same as the client and my evaluation, then we have to talk about litigation options. If you're suing the at-fault party, then that's a lawsuit. If you're bringing a claim against your own insurance, then you have to look at your policy, whether the policy is a binding arbitration policy or a litigation policy. And that's where an attorney can kind of help sift through that policy language for you. If you were to file a lawsuit, then the general steps are you're looking at a deposition, which is where the defense attorney for the insurance company will ask you questions under oath about the accident, your injuries, your treatment, and any pre-existing conditions that you might have had.
Would this be considered like sort of an initial consultation or like a discovery period?
This is part of the discovery phase of the lawsuit. It's the deposition framework is typically you're looking at probably 2 to 4 hours of questioning by the defense attorney. Litigation is something you don't want to do unrepresented. I will say that the rules in litigation are very precise, and you're up against the large State Farms or Progressives of the world who have attorneys on retainer. Getting overpowered by them is very common, is what I've seen before. And it's harder to bring an attorney in after you filed a lawsuit than to do it before.
Yeah. Awesome. So this is where kind of where you sit down and you talk to the injured individual and you kind of exchange information and evidence that's sort of related to your injury and what's going on with your case and just any concerns you have. Like, what would a normal day look like for a deposition with a client?
Yeah, so you're typically going to be in the post-COVID world, most depositions are going to be over Zoom. Some are still in person, but you're typically going to be asked questions by the defense attorney, so by the attorney representing the insurance company. Mm-hmm. And they'll usually go through background information. They'll go through like your educational history, your work history, any previous accidents, previous injuries, previous medical care, what your family looks like. Are you married? Do you have children? A lot of it feels irrelevant, but it is designed to get at, you know, what are potential witnesses, what potential knowledge you bring to this claim outside of just what a layperson might have. And then they get into the specifics about the accident. Mm-hmm. How did it happen? Where, when, what, you know, specifics about what happened. And
I think an attorney is kind of building a case.
Yes.
So they've got to get as much background information and kind of history as possible with your attorney. You want to make sure that you're really, like we talked about in one of our podcasts, transparency is very important at this point. Yes. As well.
Yes, it is. And your attorney should be preparing you before a deposition, so you know the types of questions that you're going to be asked and the kind of ideal way to answer them. While you need to be honest and transparent, because it is under oath, sometimes less is more. In a deposition, you don't necessarily want to open the floodgates to something that isn't being asked of you by the defense attorney. So it's always important anytime you're under oath to pay close attention to the questions that are asked of you and make sure you understand them before you answer.
Thank you. Wonderful. So in regards to that legal process, tell us a little bit about sort of the different stages. So first you're going to have that complaint, then mm-hmm. you're going to have that discovery, or, you know, what we just talked about. And then you'll have, perhaps you may have a trial period. You may have to go to trial.
Yes.
So those are kind of the stages of the personal injury lawsuit. Is there anything else to add to those stages, or is it mostly just complaint, discovery, trial?
So there typically is going to be either a mandatory arbitration, which is essentially an informal trial. A trial is going to be with a jury, and that the number of jurors depends on the state you're in, but for civil, typically about 8 jurors, whereas an arbitration is typically led by one attorney who hears your case, who's independently selected, and who will decide both the liability issues and your total damages. Arbitration is typically not going to be binding, so either side can appeal to a jury trial if they wanted to, but it's kind of an alternative settlement option to try to protect the courts from getting overwhelmed by these cases, because usually there's just too many filed every year to go to a trial. So an arbitration is an informal trial. Essentially, all the evidence is presented, testimony is taken, but instead of many days, it's usually like 4 hours. And the other option would be a settlement conference, which is where a judge pro tem, which is kind of in a separate judge, not a sitting judge, hears the case from both sides separately in different rooms and goes back and forth trying to point out the strengths and weaknesses to each side to get them to come to a number that they can all live with. Typically, neither side is happy with it, but the goal is to achieve a settlement to avoid the costs of a jury trial.
Yeah, exactly. So just like you said, reaching a resolution without going to trial is kind of the goal here. We want to settle, even though both parties may not love the outcome, but settling is something that usually we strive for in this world, just because, yes, exactly, there's so much cost, time, energy, and emotion that goes into taking everything to a trial.
Yes. So, and the cost of trial is something that I think a lot of lay people who aren't in this world maybe underestimate. You're talking about having to pay your doctors to take a day or a half day off to come testify. Mm-hmm. You're talking about jury fees and interpreter fees potentially, and transcripts. And it's what can be only a couple $100 before trial turns into thousands to tens of thousands at trial. So it's, there's a reason why less than 1% of cases in the civil realm go to a jury trial. And a lot of it is cost prohibitive. It just doesn't benefit the plaintiff typically to spend those costs. And also a jury is just very unpredictable. There's a lot of information that you can't explain to a jury because of various rules that are in place in different jurisdictions. One of the big ones in Arizona is you can't explain that you're going after the insurance company and that the insurance is going to ultimately pay for what you're asking for. Rather, the jury thinks you're going after the other driver personally, typically, and we cannot correct that in Arizona. We can't talk about insurance at all. So it's a very large hurdle to overcome.
Makes sense. Okay. Going back to, like, you know, all the costs that's involved for a trial, just so kind of our audience understands this, we talk so much about how with personal injury, that doesn't come out of the injured victim's pockets, right? It comes out of the insurance company. So why is it so important that we save costs when we're talking about going into a trial? Just so that they kind of understand why we still want to preserve that bucket of money, I guess.
Yes, that's a very good question, Kara. So attorney's fees are not part of what we're talking about in terms of what a client would owe or a plaintiff would owe in a lawsuit, but the costs of the lawsuit are ultimately the responsibility of the injured party. Whoever ends up winning can ask for those costs to be paid by the other side, but the risk is, especially with a jury that you never know what they're going to do, that those costs don't get compensated or that the client ends up owing money to the insurance company if the jury doesn't agree with our arguments. So that's always something that an attorney has to be explaining to their clients of the risks of litigation. Certainly some cases are much riskier than others, but it's always something to keep in mind as to what's in the best interest of the client.
Another reason why that's so important to have an attorney too, because they can really help you manage that risk.
Yes. And most law firms in a court case will advance those costs for the client. So it's essentially an interest-free loan from the attorney. It's not something that you're having to come out of pocket. Make sure that that's a conversation you're having with whoever's representing you, though. So you have an idea of if you have to come out of pocket that money, or if it's just something that's going to be reimbursed to the law firm at the end of the case.
Yeah. So would you say if, let's say, going to trial costs $100,000, but we're trying to get a couple $100,000 out of the case, then, you know, you're netting $100,000 versus if you were able to not, you didn't have to go to trial and you're in mediation or arbitration and you only had to pay $50,000 for that process, then you would net $150,000. So ultimately, the reimbursement, I guess, back to the client is going to be a lot.
Yeah, I think it's the cost benefit analysis has to be evaluated.
Can we give an example? Like, I'm trying to like I was trying to do my $100,000, the math part, but like, what's a good example of one that you have?
Yeah. So, you know, there are times when I'm at mediation and maybe there's like a liability dispute, as particularly, let's say in a slip and fall case, there's pretty much almost always going to be some personal responsibility for why the person fell. You weren't paying close enough attention to where you were walking. You weren't wearing the right shoes, whatever it might be. At mediation, we might have an offer, let's say, of $100,000 to settle. And the in-pocket amount to my client at mediation might be, let's say, $60,000 after everything's dealt with and reductions and everything. The risk of going to trial, which is also time-consuming because a trial is not going to happen a week later. A trial is going to happen 6 months to a year after a mediation. Doing the math on what if the jury were to award the same $100,000 or even $150,000, when we take the costs into effect, the client's netting the same or less at trial, oftentimes than what is on the table at mediation. And so that's, you know, that's the push pull that we have to give is like, maybe at trial we could do better, but the cost of trial is going to outweigh how much better we do.
So I've heard attorneys a lot bring up and say that it's never good to sue on principle. Do you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that. The at the end of the day, the law is emotionless. And so that's, you know, what we think is fair or what we know should be fair is not necessarily what the law provides for or allows for in terms of recovery. I've had so many examples over my career of people who, you know, wanted to really just stick it to the other driver because they felt like they did it on purpose or something. And we go through the whole process, and at the end of the day, they end up with less than they would have gotten before litigation because they went on principle versus listening to the advice that I gave them before, that they probably would end up in a worse situation. So it really is, you know, the client always decides whether we settle or not, but taking the emotion out of it is often very important to make a rational decision because the law doesn't care about emotion, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's so interesting to me because I think a lot of people, you know, they're driven on trying to get back at the other person, or they feel revengeful in their spirit and soul and like really want to like get go all the way to trial. Right. Mm-hmm. But just, yeah, there's so much risk with that. So it's just good to keep in mind that, like, you know, you can only do so much and your attorney can best advise because usually they're a third party that's going to have not as much emotional interest in your case. So another.
And they've seen it before usually. And so it's, yep. You know, we can speak to you from experience of, you know, I've had clients do this before and this is the result that we've seen. And, mm-hmm. you know, we get trial reports and stuff. So we know what other cases like yours have gone before a trial recently and what that result was. And so we keep our thumb on the pulse of what's happening in the courts. Yeah.
I want to talk about evidence gathering. So like when you do have a claim and it, you know, kind of gets initiated, but what kind of evidence do we need? What's the importance of kind of preserving that evidence? Obviously we want to, like you said, create a strong case for your client. So what do we got to do on our end as an injured person to create some good evidence and to help deliver to you?
So step one is when you're at the scene of an accident, be it, you know, a car accident or slip and fall, whatever pictures you can get of the scene is helpful. You know, with a car accident, let's take pictures of the intersection, of the damage to the vehicles. You know, if you are in a position to be able to call the police, have the police come out, generate a report. If you slip and fall, take a picture of what you fell on or in, and the, you know, the area around so we can see what, you know, what the circumstances were that caused that fall. If you're in a position to look around, if there's any video camera footage, either from local businesses or if you're in a business when you fall, you know, telling somebody so that we can gather that within a short time frame, because those usually aren't, you know, preserved forever. So at the scene, that's, you know, day one, that's the best evidence to gather.
Yeah, I think that's like a good rule of thumb for life, you know, just remembering that, you know, the more evidence and documentation that you have for anything really is going to be very mm-hmm. helpful for backing up a claim. But yeah. Also, what do you think about expert opinions, like having somebody that's on the scene? Would you want to bring them into it? What's your experience with people trying to get some witness?
Yeah, definitely. If there's witnesses, get their information, get the other party's information, you know, the other drivers, all of them involved, take pictures of their licenses if you can, or their license plates. Driver's license is great, though. Take pictures of their insurance cards. Really just have all the information that you might need down the road to call anybody that you need to call. Also make sure that you, if there are witnesses, you know, get their name and phone number and maybe even address if they're willing to give that to you.
Obviously, you know, going to court and building a case, it's always going to be so crucial to have as much evidence and documentation as you can. So think about that. I know that maybe if somebody's getting injured, that's the last thing they want to think about. But mm-hmm. especially if there's someone else with you, just try to, you know, do as much as you can to gather as much.
Or if friends or family show up to the scene to help you after, maybe they can gather that for you while you're tending to your, you know, your injuries. Also, if you have any visible injuries, take photographs of those. You know, if you have bruising, scrapes, abrasions, if your airbag went off and you get an airbag burn to your face or anything. If there's bleeding, take pictures of those and continue to take pictures as they heal to document and demonstrate how long you were living with that physical manifestation, that visible manifestation of your injuries.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Awesome. Well, I wanted to hit one more topic before we close up, but what do you think about time limits for, you know, the steps after an injury? What mm-hmm. would you say in regards to sort of how much time we would wait or can wait until we either talk to an attorney, or if you can provide a little bit of guidance on that?
Yeah. So number one, you know, the most important thing to me is that you get checked out after an accident. There's a lot of invisible injuries that can manifest over time. So going and just getting evaluated by the emergency room or an urgent care and just making sure you're okay, that's always step one. That's the most important thing. And then after that, definitely there's a few different things to keep in mind. Each state has their own statute of limitations for bringing an injury claim. That's a quick Google search. It's just statute of limitations.
Yeah. What's statute of limitation? Because I feel like a lot of people might not understand what that means.
So that is the time frame that you have legally within your state to bring a claim against an insurance company. And so for most states, that's going to be 2 years. Some states, that's 3 years, 5 years. Some states, it's one. It's a quick Google search. If you don't bring your claim within that time frame, though, your claim is gone. There's no way to bring it back. You can't resurrect it later. If there's government involvement, like say you get hit by a police vehicle, or there's construction on a highway or something, then that statute is typically much, much shorter. That in Arizona, for example, that statute of limitations to bring a claim against the government in Arizona is only 180 days. It's only 6 months. So it's very important that you do a quick Google search or call an attorney to figure out what your statute is. Because again, if you don't bring the claim in that time, you can't ever bring it later.
Yeah, that makes sense. I always like to talk about this just because it really varies so much, especially between different industries. But, for personal injury, it's just so important to get on top of it. And, just your immediate attention to getting an attorney and getting the medical attention even, and everything is just important to do as soon as you can and not wait.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, even though there is the statute of limitation, there is that allowance of time for like up to 2 years potentially. But sometimes, life just gets in front and you never know when it's going to mm-hmm. resurface and you're going to need that help. So, I appreciate you kind of.
The other thing that I would say is time sensitive is get your vehicle, at least get an estimate on your vehicle. If you've been in a motor vehicle accident, I cannot tell you how many times I've had clients who don't do that after the first accident. And then by the time they're about to do it, they get in another accident. And so it's about kind of generating and preserving the evidence to present the best possible claim. And also, just getting an estimate is great, but getting the vehicle actually repaired is really important too, because there's a visual, an initial estimate is just purely based on what you can see. So say you're rear-ended and then they take that bumper off. Now suddenly we've got maybe some frame damage to the shock absorbers, maybe some undercarriage damage, maybe some trunk damage that you didn't initially notice just from the photographs that were taken. And so in so many ways that creates a stronger claim as well, because the insurance companies like to argue that there's some sort of correlation between the amount of property damage paid out. $900 in property damage means you weren't injured. That's an argument I hear all the time. But if that's based solely on one, that's not true. But two, if that's based solely on a visual estimate, when you go get your vehicle fixed, that $900 visual estimate usually turns into $3,000 to $5,000 in actual repairs.
Okay, that's really good to know. So yeah, the value of a car, as we know, can change in a matter of days. So You heard it from Amara. Get your car checked out. Get the estimate for repairs. Where would you suggest getting the value of your car determined?
So I would go to, a reputable dealership. If you have a body shop that you've worked with or a dealership that you've worked with, that's usually the best place. If you typically get your car, serviced at one place, the insurance companies have relationships with a number of dealerships. That relationship involves a discounted rate typically. So that automatically means that your total repair cost is going to be less than it might be on the market. So, and you're allowed to get two opinions. So don't feel like you need to go with the first place that the insurance sends you.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Amara. I appreciate you being here and delivering more really helpful information for people who are out there on the roads and, getting in those car accidents. And just, we want you guys to all stay safe, but it does happen. So we're glad that you're here. We're glad you're listening and educating yourself, because it is really important to really learn exactly how it is to go through this process. So, and what you can do as the injured person. So thank you for joining us on this week's podcast on Crash Course. And we look forward to having you next week. Any final goodbyes or thoughts, Samara?
No, thank you guys for joining us. And certainly if you have any follow-up questions, feel free to reach out to us, drop us a message. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to answer any specific questions that might come up as we get into kind of these more nitty-gritty details of the process.
Yeah, thank you. And join us next week. We're going to be talking about personal injury timeline. So kind of what the time is involved for you and how long.
Yeah, personal injury timeline.
We're gonna talk about the personal injury timeline and sort of what that looks like for you guys. So thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and we will see you next week.
All right. Bye, Kara. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Crash Course Podcast.
We hope you found it both insightful and empowering.
If you found value in today's episode, we'd greatly appreciate your support.
Please subscribe to our podcast and share your thoughts by leaving a review on your preferred platform.
Your feedback is invaluable in helping others discover the guidance we offer.
Don't miss out on updates and exclusive content. Follow us on Instagram and YouTube at Crash Course to stay connected with upcoming episodes and behind-the-scenes insights.
Your presence in our podcast community means everything. Until next time, remember,
stay resilient, keep learning, and keep moving forward.